We're so excited to announce our senior spotlight with Concierge Care Advisors. This is our podcast number 2. I'm Mary Cordova, one of the co-founders with Concierge Care Advisors. We're a care and transitional company, and I'm sitting here with two of our physician advisory board physicians, Dr. Brian Ferris and Dr. Alex DeMorais. Thank you so much for coming, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When you put down geographical challenges and expectations, was that more based on, the geographical realm of the senior moving and then being able to get back to the clinic?
I think it's multidimensional. I think that it depends on where you live,
mm-hmm.
And what your needs are. And so I think Alex's point of what's in Napa and, you know, what's it close to, right, which is the Bay Area. We're a little bit different in that we have this big, mountain range, and then it gets pretty sparse pretty quickly, right? We have 8 million people in the state, and it's a huge, huge area. But
it's not seen.
Oh, okay. No, it's not shown.
It's a huge area, but it gets pretty remote.
Quickly.
40 minutes east of here.
Right.
And frankly, it gets not as populated, but there's lots of services north and south. But as soon as you start going east, and I think you can replicate the same thing in Idaho and Oregon and probably Montana and certainly Wyoming.
I'm still recording, yeah, so I'm just keeping it all one clip. So
there, y'all are ready. There's lots of, that's millions of people that are going to need, we're all facing the same problems, but it's a challenge. And that's just from the pure geography. And from the care needs standpoint, they can travel to the big center, and the big center faces the same pressures that everybody else faces, which is predefined length of stay, pressure to discharge, establish follow-up, and in the EMRs you can say, well, follow up in 10 days, follow up in 2 weeks. Well, unless that appointment is made,
never happens.
Then you call and they don't know. They can see you in 6 weeks, or it never happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's within the same system. They cross systems and they come from one center to a bigger center and then go back regionally. Then it's just that much more, the net is got bigger and bigger holes.
Yeah.
Well, it's not cumbersome. There's just holes. They're just going to fall right through it. They're not going to get it. Then it's really, really difficult. And so I think that geography places a huge standpoint. And so I think one of the conversations, as we talked about where is CCA going to be able to go, I think trying to add that to the palette of what's the plan at this point and what can be put into place, hard stop until that's done, would be also very beneficial. Because then they go from, I know you wear different hats. They come out of the big center and the specialists, and then they end up in one of your facilities, and they're going to be okay for a few days. But then if the momentum of their care plan isn't supported and continued and monitored and followed up on, then they start, it's kind of like an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to hit stall speed and they're going to be readmitted.
They're going to crash.
Right?
Yep.
And so
I think for me, one of the important aspects of why I joined CCA is the fact that you're looking at the entire person.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just saying, wait until then I will come out and help you.
Right.
Right? Because that then is too far.
Yep.
And the fact that if you have a client that's hospitalized and you can connect not only with the group in the hospital, or potentially once they get discharged, facilitate them getting in to see their physician or the specialist, that's really important. today. I was with Brian and we were just talking. So I had a patient who went to the emergency room because they needed to. His wife couldn't take care of him, and they live in an independent living facility, right? So last night he got up, he fell twice. She had to get him up and put him in bed. And then finally I said, he's got to go to the emergency room, that something's wrong. Well, the emergency room wants to send him home, and which is impossible. So no, I had to speak to the ER physician and convince them as to why he should be admitted and at least evaluated for what's happening. Because if a person stays in the hospital for a number of days, then they can be safely discharged to a skilled facility to continue the follow-up process with the specialist or the rehab, instead of just being discharged back home to the environment that they came from.
Right.
And the difficulty is that we don't communicate as much as we used to. So many patients and families will show up to the emergency room with a loved one in need, but they don't have an advocate.
Right.
You know, the family member is the advocate, and the family member doesn't know that to say, no, I cannot take him home.
Right.
It's not a safe discharge. We need to do something.
Well, or empowered to it. Or in your case, like you said, advocate. What, to me, I listen to it as you, it's a symphony, and you were playing your section of the orchestra perfectly. And unfortunately, it's common that it doesn't. And so they're not empowered because, well, the doctor said everything was okay.
Right.
The doctor said everything was okay right here, right now, but doesn't necessarily know the whole big picture. So then they're at risk for, they're in their independent facility, then they're back and forth, they make it kicked out, everything escalates.
Mm-hmm.
And again, having a service that is in place where it can be seen, tracked, consider the advocacy is vital.
When people call us from the hospital and we know they're not safe to return, we just let them know to use our name and just give them our business card and tell them they're working with us. And then we can push back.
Have you had any from the ER, not even in the hospital, but
absolutely,
when they're still in the ER?
In observation.
And how does that go?
They'll hold them in observation until we can basically get the patient placed safely.
Wow.
Yeah. So as long as we are in contact with the observation and the emergency department saying, hey, give us until this afternoon, will you? You know, sometimes it's overnight. They'll hold them. But as long
as we're
involved.
It's like better than a Monopoly card.
Yeah, exactly. Just give them CCA.
That's really important because it doesn't happen. And many times, like you mentioned, families don't feel empowered to make those decisions, right?
Right.
There are many times where my patients get hospitalized and I don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
No one calls me.
Right.
So I have to be concise with family members who may not be involved with their care to say, please call me
if something happens.
And for me, you know, I have a concierge-based practice, so family members can call my cell phone directly. It's a little harder in traditional practices, but still, if a family member's, when I was here working and a family member called that they were hospitalized, we certainly made a phone call to the hospitalist group to let them know that, yes, we'll see them upon discharge. And it meant a lot, you know. And when you start opening up that communication chain, you really provide better continuity of care.
Absolutely.
And there's not that empty void that's, you know, in the discharge summary says, see your primary care in 7 days, and then you call on the phone. It's 2 weeks to get in.
Right.
Two weeks. They're
longer.
Know, and they haven't gotten the document. And the hard part, and I think the sad part is that there are the ideas sketched out there about transition of care and so on and so forth. And I've had the pleasure of working and looking into different systems. And I think some are, you know, are getting it where there is a handoff, there is a transitional care, there is a post-discharge visit. And over, I've done it long, I got enough gray hair or loss hair that I've seen it tick up, but I think we're still behind.
Oh, yes.
And I think that would help as well, because again, it's in this process, it's another step where if you're sitting there going, okay, this happened, okay, and then that clinician, that may prompt the clinician to bring up the, well, this isn't solved, so what about next time? And then it just opens the door for those questions. So encouraging that follow-up or being there to support that follow-up, I think, is another vital point of balancing the personal, social, financial side of someone's affairs versus the medical side.
Totally agree. And as you gentlemen know, that's exactly what we look at, is the medical, financial, social, geographical, and spiritual needs of the patient, and looking at all of those geographics. It's funny, most adult children will say, oh, I don't care, I just want him to be in the best place. And then we say, well, pretend it's Friday in Seattle, 5 o'clock, you get a call from the emergency room. Now where do you want them? So then they start to realize that, you know, it's really important geographically to have them close. That's important. And especially, like I tell people, if your mom is used to seeing you every other day, it probably isn't going to be a good transition if you move her 60 miles away where she's going to see you monthly. You have to keep that continuity of what they're used to, right, what they're accustomed to.
And the social worker doesn't know that. And,
right, and, right.
And when it's come up for me in inpatient care, I always suggest, and I don't remember where I picked this up, but I tell the family member, talk to the social worker, go visit two or three yourself.
Yeah, yep.
And that, and they don't always do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure the success rate is 50% to 2/3.
Right.
But there's, it's not a small number that don't.
Right.
And again, I think that lack of buy-in influences outcome, not only on the medical side, but everything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One thing that I was just thinking about, you know, we're really good at investing in our finances for our future, a majority. It's been a challenge depending on where you work and the plans that are available.
Sure.
But anytime there's a crisis, okay, the stock market falls, something happens to the economy, what's the first thing that we do? We call our financial advisors, right?
Yep.
And we worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's a medical crisis, many times we don't call our doctors.
Our doctors, yeah.
Or if there's a medical crisis, we don't call organizations like yourself, you know, which are advisors to mm-hmm. help us through
navigate the whole
navigation
industry.
Process. Yeah. We just basically do what we used to do in the old days. We just take our money and throw it somewhere and hope
it
grows.
Sticks, right?
And many times it fails.
Yeah.
So having a specialist on board, no matter what you do, whether it be legal, medical, you know, a plumber, an electrician, they're all important in our lives. And the earlier you call them, as Brian mentioned, you know, getting involved upstream early in, before problems become a crisis, really influences outcomes drastically. It's the difference between returning to your home versus ending up in a skilled nursing facility to recover. I think it's that.
Well, and then it may have a clinical outcome in terms of when you start to back up to all-cause survival, all-cause mortality, all-cause morbidity. When you start looking at it, the big, big, big picture, then you start to get a very interesting perspective. But you all have a hotline, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. We have a hotline. We have a 1-800 number. We have a live chat. The live chat's answered from 8 a.m. to pretty much 9 p.m. at night. Same with the 800 number. 365 days.
On Pacific time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think what people really don't know is what's the cost to utilize your services?
Yeah, great question. There's no cost to use our services. We may follow a senior and their families for several years and never make a transition. We get paid by the senior housing communities, and we represent them all equally based on financial, social, medical, geographical, and spiritual needs of the one holistic senior. And then also on the adult family homes, they have to meet our standards. So we go review those, make sure that they're compliant with the state of Washington. We have a team behind us that make sure that there's no enforcement letters, and they're making sure that they're compliant with the state as well. And we get paid by the senior housing communities when there's a successful transition. So we may follow someone for a couple years, help them find a PCP, help them find in-home care, home health, hospice, and never make a transition. And there's never a cost for us to navigate the whole industry for them during that journey.
I thought that was the coolest thing when Brian introduced me to your organization, that I was like, wow, they're really out there for the person.
Absolutely. You know,
they're not chipping at their dollar or right. their wallets to try to get something out there. They're really an advocate for them because their success right. and their transition is when you get reimbursed for all the work that you and your team have done. But before that, you're out there helping them.
We're out there helping them, you know. And doctors, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. And what an important subject. We'll continue this conversation again.
It was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.